You want an extraordinary life. If you want to be the 1% in this country that have enough money for retirement, it's going to be very challenging to become that 1% if you don't embrace the spread and the fundamentals that there is such thing as good debt. All debt is bad? I disagree.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green. Please stay tuned to the end of the episode to hear boring yet important disclosures. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and today's episode is titled, Debt is Good. Now, not all debt is good, but debt can be good and debt can be great. And if you embrace the spread and embrace good debt, right? So good debt is good and bad debt is bad. And I'm doing this episode as a follow-up to the previous episode with George Camel with Dave Ramsey, because I so enjoyed having George Camel with Dave Ramsey Solutions on the show. I enjoy listening to Mr. Ramsey over a decade ago, and I'll talk about that in a second again. And so I'm really grateful that his representatives asked to come on the show. It was a fun conversation. My only regret is that I thought we had an hour, not under 30 minutes, because boy, did I want to do a deep dive into the weeds on a lot of topics, and I wanted to do follow-up questions because I so enjoy what they teach to create a good foundation for people that are struggling with saving strategies and debt and credit card debt. They've set a good foundation, but it doesn't end there. And I'm afraid with everything I've studied and reviewed with Ramsey Solutions, that's kind of where it ends. So anyway, I really enjoyed having him come on. My only regret is that I thought we had an hour, not under 30 minutes. I thought my previous episode where I was showing being fully authentic, where I talk about the religion known as COVID, and boy, please, I'm not discounting how bad COVID can be for people. It's just, my gosh, it's very hard. The emotions around this pandemic, it's very hard to have logical conversations without fear, greed, anger getting put into it. And so it's just best to leave the topic alone. However, my wife, me, just always craved to be a great leader. And part of being a great leader is just you just own up to when you say things wrong or make a mistake. And as my wife pointed out to me, you probably shouldn't make promises you can't keep, Ken, where you said you're not going to talk about COVID anymore, because I'm sure it will come up in the future. And she's right, because I just talked about it right now. But I'll probably dive in the weeds on that again. But I thought that topic might create some comments and controversy. But the reality is, listeners and advisors of the show where I had George Camel come on, knowing what I teach and the clients I work with and how I do things, and I embrace good debt, that there's a lot more to the story. And so I thought it'd be important to discuss this on this show. So that discussion with George created a lot of questions from listeners. And I want to be very clear, I do not endorse a lot of what Dave Ramsey teaches. That wasn't the point. But I thought George would be a great guest to help those that struggle with creating a strong foundation. My best clients, or I shouldn't say my best, but a lot of my best clients really create an incredible amount of momentum right off the bat are the ones that are either Dave Ramsey disciples or just learned from their parents or got some great education, which didn't happen in school. I mean, the elementary schools, high schools, college really don't teach about money, which is a whole other topic. Why is that? And we usually learn from the financial industry of how to save and invest money, which that could be a tragedy as well. Because what is typically taught in the industry are not traditionally sound practices. And I unfortunately always make that joke. It's the 99% of the advisors in this industry that make the 1% look bad. And so what I do really absolutely love, though, is that I used to love listening to Dave Ramsey's show on the radio over a decade ago. I thought he was funny. He addressed a big problem in this country, which is, the American way is, you earn 100 grand, you spend more than 100 grand. You earn 50 grand, you spend more than 50 grand. And it's just very easy because there's just so many bright and shiny objects. The amount of wealth and productivity and creativity made in this country, it's amazing. And we have all these beautiful gadgets and tools, and what was once a want, like air conditioning, is now a need. And so I enjoyed his humor. I enjoyed how he would yell at people for asking stupid questions and just say, you know, it was entertaining to me. He's a great financial entertainer, and he's funny. And when things are funny, we listen, and that stuff can creep in. And I think helping people learn that, hey, you have, and savings are important, being subject to usury and just owing people for the rest of your life, these banks, these credit card companies, it's important, and he's addressed that. And being in debt to credit card companies and other financial institutions forever, I mean, what a horrible life to have that kind of burden on your shoulders where the majority of your income is just going to interest alone. And so I really admire the marketing machine of Dave Ramsey's show. I really enjoy a lot of the personalities like George Campbell, who's come on, and formerly a Dave Ramsey personality, Anthony O'Neill. I mean, great success stories. And what I also admire is that they're not asking any of their listeners or their audience to do what they're not doing. They've emphasized that everything that they're asking their audience to do, they do themselves. They don't believe in debt. All debt is bad. I mean, George, it's like, said that on the show. Yeah, all debt is bad. Now, except for 15-year mortgages, that's another story, which I love to have fun with. Hopefully, I'll be on their show soon so I can address all these follow-up questions. But anyway, no debt, no credit card, no credit cards, right? Now, they believe that. So no debt, no credit cards, and paying off mortgages as fast as possible. And so my only regret is that I had so many more follow-up questions I wanted to ask George. Their PR people with my PR people, I must have misunderstood something. I thought I had an hour of them on the show, and then found out before we started the show, we only had about 25, 30 minutes. And so I look forward to continuing the discussion, because I really would like to go to, hey, these are the pieces I absolutely agree with, but here are the areas that I strongly disagree with them on. And so let me just repeat where I just want to emphasize where I agree. Living within your means. Awesome. Credit score is not the end all. I agree. Credit card debt can be really, really bad. And you'd be amazed at the type of debt people have with credit cards. And we're looking at 20%, 25% plus interest rates. Brutal. Now, should I think that should be banned? Absolutely not, because I know businesses that became very successful that through hard money lending, where they're paying 50, 60% interest rate, crazy amount, where it saved their company. So it's great that I like government staying out of it as much as possible and let private people work with private people. And I just think that the education's where we just need to be educated and understand the choices we're making. And so credit card debt can be really, really bad. I mean, if the stock market has averaged about 10%, and now advisors love throwing out that 10% number, I'm not going to dive into the weeds on that one, but let's just use the popular number, 10%. If the stock market averages historically 10% with dividends, how can you win if the credit card debt is 20% plus? You can't. That's the spread. You're losing that game. And I also agree where they talk about student loans. I mean, it's an absolute, there is definitely a student loan crisis. And, you know, it just was too easy to get that kind of money. And as I told you go from your learning years to your earning years, you spend an incredible amount of money to get these degrees. And you just inherited a house mortgage, a student mortgage, you're going to pay off over 30 years potentially. I mean, that's, you know, that debt could be really a bad debt. And as I told my daughter Lauren years ago, college can be a very expensive place to figure out what you want to do. Get out in the workforce. Trade your skill set, your time, your energy, and find out what you love and what you don't love. And then once you find out where you can serve people and where you excel at, and boy, is she skilled. I could not do what she does, taking care of dementia, Alzheimer's. It is such an incredible skill set, taking care of people in these long-term care type facilities. And it's just amazing what she can do. That is a very unique skill set. And so she's found her sweet spot. And so now going, when the time is right to go to college full-time, there's a purpose there. There's meaning behind that degree. And I'll get to where I disagree, but the student debt has become a crisis for many. But once you figure out what you want and where you want to apply it, man, can these forms of higher education, including college and universities, I would argue that that could be, it's not all bad debt. It could be a good debt. And I know we ran out of time to discuss that because I was really looking forward to that part of the conversation and understand more of what they're teaching. So these are areas that I agree that student loans can be very, very damaging. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans, and I'm sure some listeners of this podcast, struggle with being paycheck to paycheck and struggle with credit card debt and are struggling with student loan debt and coming up with simple systems to live within their means. And I think what George Camel, Dave Ramsey, if you're listening to the show and you struggle with that piece, the reason why I was so happy to have them come on is that they really, I feel, have good systems to create a good foundation of getting over the biggest psychological hurdle, because we've got it so good in such a wealthy, the wealthiest nation in the world, this country. You know, I feel that they've been very helpful with teaching people that you can't have everything you want. There's needs and wants. And I think they set a good foundation, living within your means, eliminating these type of outrageous credit card debts and not getting into that type of trap. Now, I'm about to get to where I disagree. If you don't want to have a miserable financial life, I think Dave Ramsey has helped out a lot of this population, people who embrace it and practice it and move forward, great strategies to create a strong foundation. Now, the part I disagree with, I mean, you're going to have, you embrace what they're teaching, you're going to have a good normal life, a fine life, financial life. However, if you want to have an extraordinary financial life, where you put systems in place, where you have a good foundation that's been set, however, but if you want to create an incredible amount of momentum of residual and passive income streams, and also not have delayed gratification of paying off all your debt for it seems like half your life, where you can enjoy a lot more use of your money today and simultaneously create systems in place that you have a way wealth, the potential for a way, way wealthier tomorrow. Not embracing good debt, I think, is a very flawed strategy. If you want an extraordinary life, if you want to be the 1% in this country that have enough money for retirement, it's going to be very challenging to become that 1% if you don't embrace the spread and the fundamentals that there is such thing as good debt. All debt is bad? I disagree. And so as my son, my five-year-old son, Maximus, last weekend, he was repeating, I heard him repeat one of my favorite phrases at the house and apparently in my tennis matches is, "Are you kidding me?" So are you kidding me? All debt is bad? And by the way, my son's repeating it a lot because he must hear me working on projects in the garage or doing something on the house, or I'm building something for my wife. And I always do something stupid where I don't remember where I put my tool. I just had it in my hand, or I haste makes waste. I think I got it. And I put together something backwards, which, by the way, a lot of the stuff that's manufactured in China, the directions are backwards. And so it's best not even, I like reading through all the instructions, but sometimes it's just best not to read the directions or instructions anymore. And so he's been hearing me say that, "Are you kidding me?" all the time. So that's me making fun of myself. But in this situation, all debt is bad? Are you kidding me? So I really wish when I was talking with George, it's like, all debt is bad. I was like, yeah, well, how do banks make money? So I wish we had more time for that discussion, because it is like the wealthiest enterprise in the world. I mean, everywhere you go, it's skyscraper after skyscraper with a bank's name on it. So how in the world can all debt be bad? And so when I mentioned the banks, he said, "Well, we're not a bank." It's like, well, I disagree. Banking, when you understand the system, all banking is a process. This is how real wealth is created. Is that for sure you got to live within your means. You need to have a saving strategy, but then you need to understand the spread and opportunity cost. And when you understand that all our money is based upon debt, it's a debt instrument. Now, if we get where money is treated differently, it's no longer debt. I mean, you pull up your dollars and you look at it, it is debt. And then so I'll teach a different strategy. But as long as that money is debt and that's how it works, we have to, I mean, if you're worth millions and millions of dollars, that is all debt. There is good debt. And if you look at the banking process of how they live off the spread, they're using OPM, other people's money. They get someone in a contract, whether it's a savings account or a checking account, that pays less than a tenth of a percent. The brick and mortar banks pay less than a tenth of a percent. They have almost no obligation on that debt. That is good debt. You go put in 100 grand into your favorite bank down the street, you'd be lucky to get a tenth of a percent. And then they literally go and leverage your money, OPM, other people's money, and they go leverage it and lend it to your neighbor. And I love using the example because Teslas are very popular in the Reno, Tahoe area. They give you a tenth and they go leverage it so your neighbor, so she can go buy a Tesla at 3.1%. On an interest-only example, 3 minus one-tenth of a percent, 3.0 minus 0.10%, I'm sorry, 3.1% loan, interest-only example to the neighbor. So he or she can go out and buy a Tesla, 100 grand, that is $3,100 a year, 3.1% interest. A tenth of a percent's owed to you, so that's $100. $3,100 minus $100, that's $3,000. So that 3% delta is a, and if you ever have more questions on this, please reach out. I have a couple of videos I can share with you on this. That is a 3,000% ROI, return on investment. That is an incredible example of leveraging other people's money, being very strategic, where you have a very small commitment and then just an outrageous return. And these are guaranteed contracts on both sides. One, the bank's guaranteeing to paying a tenth of a percent. And then the other side, the neighbor is guaranteeing to pay it 3.1%. Whose money is it? It's yours. In the case of the banks, other people's money. That is the spread. And if you want to start creating just an incredible amount of momentum and start, you know, I mean, your earned income for the longest time is your number one investment. But over time, as you start creating residual income streams and passive income streams, over time, the passive and residual income streams will way surpass your earned income. That's how you create financial independence. That's how you create financial freedom. And by assuming all debt is bad, that is a massive hurdle to accelerating, creating a lot of wealth a lot sooner and a lot of enjoyment of your money today. It's just way easier to put systems in place where you embrace good debt. So leveraging other people's money and being strategic on where you save and invest that money into certain products in this industry, you can also take advantage of numerous benefits with the use of $1. Banks do it through what's known as fractional banking, but if we apply this process, that's all it is banking is a process. Master the spread. Understand and master how you save and invest money, understanding opportunity costs. And then when we move money in a way that we can get simultaneous benefits with the use of $1, that is how you can become the one. And it's really not much work. It's just a switch where you can be the top 1% in this nation. And when I say top 1%, I mean the 1% that have enough for retirement. Less than 1% of this nation has $1 million for retirement. The reason I do this show every week, the reason why I'm still in this industry is I love my clients. I love the listeners of this show. I'm a contrarian advisor. I like to flip the script. If you look at the financial industry, I mean, the S&P 500 hit at the bottom, like 666, and I believe it was the first or second quarter of 09. I believe it was March 2009. I'll have to look back at my notes. And one of my blogs years ago, I wrote about this. You always joke that, you know, you can't get to heaven without going through hell. Well, the S&P 500 index hit 666 and has been on a tear since 09. Yet, so the industry is doing incredibly well. Yet only 1% of their clients have enough for retirement. Interesting. So I like being the contrarian advisor. I like flipping the script by saying, hey, I have a really bold idea. How about I just teach the exact opposite of what the financial industry is teaching their clients to do? And just teach what the industry is actually doing. That's what I do on a daily basis when I work with my clients one-on-one. And from a higher level, more conceptual level is what I share in the show, because every family is unique and has a different current financial situation and have different priorities and dreams of what they want to accomplish. And so, yeah, let's just do what the industry is actually doing with their money, with your money, actually, be more clear. And so once you understand it's a process and apply those same systems to your daily lives, I always joke a test is easy once you know the answers. This financial industry, it's a game. It's a financial game. And are you in it to win? Are you in it to lose? And I like winning. I like seeing my clients win. I like hearing from listeners of the show and how they're winning in this game with finances. And once you know the answers, it's just a couple switches. That's it. A little switch here, a little switch there, changing how money flows a little bit. It can have such a profound impact on how you enjoy the use of your money today. And it'll have an incredible impact on just an enormous potential for way, way wealthier tomorrow if you take advantage of concepts like debt is good, or more specifically, bad debt is bad, good debt is good. And so all debt is bad, I disagree. And I can't wait to have an additional conversation with George or Dave Ramsey or both on this topic. Now, if you're someone, if you struggle with debt and you just cannot stop using these credit cards, then for sure, cut them up. But you know, there is good debt. Now, the myth of credit score is one thing we didn't really get. I agree too. I mean, this whole thing with living and dying by having a good credit score, that game gets old, but we've been so brainwashed and taught to think that way. But the area where credit reports are important though, I mean, it's just the way the game, that's the way the financial game is played. And so do you want to fight that beast? Now, if there are spiritual reasons for why you don't want to use a credit and you have spiritual reasons why you don't like that, that's a different argument. But if it's just based upon financial strategies, I love credit cards. And if you have, now you got to pay it off in full every month, but you can take advantage of the float. They have all these built-in benefits on these credit cards. When you go travel, depending on what kind of credit card company you're using, I mean, you've got built-in auto insurance on that. So you don't have to buy their insurance or have it hoping your own auto insurance policy covers it. You get to take advantage of pretty outrageous coverages with these credit card companies. There's a lot of insurance which comes with these things. And plus, you know, the more points you use, I mean, we get nothing in the savings accounts of these banks, but boy, can you take advantage of a lot of these points. I mean, I had an advisor reach out to me the other day who just came from a phenomenal trip overseas, where essentially the use of his credit cards and all those points paid for a phenomenal trip. I mean, so it was free. So you can pay cash and miss out, but if you can move money in a way that you have all these benefits, for me personally, and a lot of my clients I represent, embrace it. You just got to pay in full, you know, every statement. You get in that trap of the interest going against you, then now you're going down the wrong trail. But I can tell you a credit score of 780 plus, 800 plus is very advantageous. Just in this one example, like states similar to Nevada, your credit score can have a huge influence on the cost of your auto insurance and home insurance. So if your credit score is in the toilet, you could be literally one family with good credits, with good credit, another family, exact same cars, exact same toys, exact same mileage that you go day to day for work. One has good credit, one has bad. The one with good credit is going to be paying way less in insurance premium. So why not take, that's just the way the game is played right now. Understand it, just play the game. And maybe over time things can change, but in states like Nevada, your credit score has a huge impact on your auto insurance rate. Now, is it fair? It doesn't matter if it's fair or not. It's just the way the game's played. So embrace having a good credit score. Now, some people are in the belief that, well, you got to keep a balance on to have a good credit score. That's crap. Just pay it off every month. You'll have a phenomenal credit score over time. Pay it off in full every month. You don't need to leave any type of balance to improve your credit score. Okay, I really want to dive into the whole mortgage discussion. And I think this is really important. Now, I get it. I don't like paying interest to others. I don't like watching this volume of interest go to other institutions. And so when it comes to the mortgage discussion of getting a 15-year mortgage and overpaying it and just having it paid off as fast as possible so you're debt-free, I understand the argument and I understand the attraction. It's like, who would want to pay all that interest to a bank? And where you do a 30-year mortgage, you're going to be paying a lot more interest compared to a 15-year mortgage. And even better than a 15-year mortgage, you can just pay cash and pay no interest to other people. Now, and so I understand that. And I've had some great guests on. I mean, John Schaub, Building Wealth One House at a Time. I mean, he's done phenomenal in real estate over the 4 decades, and he's helped a lot of other people do incredibly well. And one of the most, I don't know if it was the first or our second conversation on this podcast, he mentioned that he rented their primary residence, I believe, for 10 years. Hopefully my memory is correct on this, and then just kept buying another building, another rental. By the way, using mortgages to do this and loans, and then within 10 years, we're able to buy cash their primary residence. Now, for me, I would have preferred a 3-year mortgage on the primary, but that's what resonated for him and his wife, is just to own their primary home outright. And so I understand that from a spiritual standpoint and just a peace of mind standpoint. You know, you pay it outright, you buy a house cash, that's no interest going to other people, and no one can take it away from you. Except you do get a nice reminder on a regular basis from your county that you really don't own that property, you're just renting it, because you do have to pay your property taxes and you do have to pay your energy bill, right? The utility companies will give you a nice reminder. I mean, I get, like, here in Reno, Nevada, I get a nice property tax reminder. And if I don't pay my property tax, they're going to take my house. Each month, I'm going to have a bill from NV Energy. I'm going to have a bill from our water authority. I'm going to have a bill from the city of Reno for a sewer. And so even though you're debt-free on owning the house, you still have these recurring debts and expenses that you have to pay. But I get it. You're not paying any interest to others. And so it could be very enticing to pay cash for a house, because it just creates certainty, peace of mind. Now, and doing paying cash or 15 years, way less interest, obviously, than a 30-year mortgage. But that's discounting something very important, which is opportunity cost. So I get being debt-free. I mean, I'll negotiate. I've talked about in this previous episodes over the last few years that, hey, when I have to go buy something, I will negotiate the best price. Once that's negotiated, then I'll go ask, hey, by the way, what loans are you offering? Now, a lot of these appliance stores and furniture companies, you go negotiate the best price, and then you ask for loans. They have a lot of really enticing loans. A lot of them are 0%. Now, of course, they got gotchas. They're going to try to get you, but 18 months, 1 year, if you can take advantage of a 0% loan and leave, for example, 10 grand in an investment or savings strategy, say it's investments, let's have fun with it, making 10%. Whether it's in the stock market or something else. Now, obviously, that investment's not guaranteed. But we've got a good historical practice over time, the stock market with dividends since inception, the S&P 500 has averaged 10%. So if you can enjoy that 10% growth year after year, and you can take advantage of getting 10 grand for free for 0% for a year and a half, I mean, you're living off the spread. You're crushing it. Why would you lose out on the opportunity of growth of that money? Now, apply that same principle to a 30-year mortgage. Interest rates are very low. And if so you can buy a $250,000 house and get a who knows what interest rates will be, but just I would argue 3.5 is low. 3.0 is low. Under 3.0 is low. I mean, I would argue under 5% is low in many situations, especially historically, you go back to the early 80s. But if you can get a loan for a 30-year mortgage, and just use this as an example, 3.5, over 30 years on a $250,000 home, you're looking at what, 13? And I don't have my amortization calculator out, but let's just say your outlay is $1,300 a month on a $250,000 loan at 3.5, right? It's lower than that, but I just... Let's just say it's 1250, whatever. Now I'm going to have to pull out a calculator. No, I'll leave it alone. Let's just say it's 1250 at a low interest rate. That's your contractual obligation. You are not obligated to have to pay more than that per month. Whereas if you do a 15-year mortgage, you're going to have to pay a lot more per month. And if you don't pay that minimum, they're going to take away the house. So what I think can be a lot more advantageous, and if you pay cash, well, you just lost out on $250,000 that could be growing at 10% every year. And if you understand living off the spread, 10 minus 3.5%, that's a 6.5% difference. And if you look at that volume of money of how that compounds over time, most of my clients, when I work with them, it really resonates to take advantage of a 30-year mortgage, but then create a strategy where that difference that would go to the 15-year is leveraged into a savings / investment account where we can let that thing grow and we can easily pay off that 30-year mortgage within 15 years. And the way I like to pay off a mortgage is I think it's way better just to write one whole check. The problem of paying down a mortgage and overpaying every single month and sacrificing a savings account where you have liquidity is that could put you in a very precarious position. I've gone through this back in, around 2008 to 2010. I overpaid my mortgage. Where if I just had an advisor or the education to just put that difference and put it into a savings and strategy and having that money liquid, when things went sideways, when my engineering income stopped, when my land and my real estate became worthless essentially overnight, for quite some time, there was no liquidity, I could have paid that mortgage for a long time from a savings strategy. And when you account for opportunity costs, if you have an investment that's making 3.5 and you're buying a $250,000 house cash, you just lost out on that $250,000 would have grown at 3.5. You get a 15-year mortgage at two, and now let's just say that what I said, the interest rate was 3.5 or a 30-year at 3.5. If all the interest rates are the same in an investment or a 15-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage, there is no difference when you account for opportunity costs. Because if you go pay cash, you just lost out what that money was going to grow to. And so I have a video, it's about 20 plus minutes, where I go into a lot of detail explaining that when you account for opportunity costs, and assuming all interest rates are equal, there is no difference between paying cash, a 15-year mortgage, or a 30-year mortgage. And after I prove that, and you see a different strategy, most of the families I work with one-on-one usually prefer the 30-year fixed mortgage because it creates a lot more certainty, creates a lot more liquidity, and they can pay off that mortgage anytime they want, but do it when they're writing a whole check, not just overpaying it month to month or each month. And so anyway, I just would love to dove into that because when you account for opportunity costs, there is no difference. And if you guys are very interested in learning more about this, please reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to send you a link where you can watch this video where I dive into it. So that's my argument on the mortgage. I thought it was just fascinating paying that thing off as fast as possible or paying cash. Now, by the way, that works for Dave Ramsey's organization. That obviously works for George Camel and a lot of their audience. And I'm not, if that's what resonates and that works, that's great. But if there's more to that story and you're interested, I'd be more than happy to share it and show why a 30-year fixed mortgage can be very advantageous. With the interest rates being low. Because when you can leverage that kind of money where you're only committed to a 3.5% and you can leverage that difference into investments, you know, pick a number that works. As long as it's making more than 3.5, you're winning. If it's making 5 or 10 or 15, or you leverage these mortgages into another rental property, some money in the stock market, and I mean, there's plenty of people that I know in the real estate sector, it is double-digit returns year after year after year. And that's how you can create this huge momentum, multiply the use of your money, create an incredible amount of velocity, and then a lot sooner than later, you have phenomenal passive and residual income streams that will outweigh your earned income. And that's why I think leveraging your money with using like a 30-year mortgage can be very advantageous. And the last piece I like to wrap up just has to do with student loans. Like I mentioned early in this episode, I was telling my daughter, going to college, that's an expensive place to figure out what you want to do. But to discount Now, getting a student loan, I understand. I mean, it's definitely a crisis because a lot of people, you know, just figure out what you want to do and then see what you're paying for that education is commensurate to the type of degree you're going to get. I mean, if you love philosophy and political science and you want to be a teacher because it's something that resonates for you and you enjoy, or the arts, you know, I think all of these education we can get through the universities and the different colleges are incredible. And these technical institutions, I'm going to have some guests come on, hopefully in a few months, that, my gosh, I mean, you can go to some of these schools for a year or 2 years in the trades, not have to pay that much, you get pretty low interest rates on these student loans, and have phenomenal six-figure incomes. I mean, it's amazing. And so I think student loan debt has become outrageous. I think getting a student loan for 200 grand or 100 grand and knowing that that career is going to pay 40,000, 50,000 a year. And, you know, I mean, my gosh, $250,000, just tying it to, it's like a house mortgage, 30-year fixed mortgage at a decent interest rate at 3.5%. If you could get a student loan at that low of a rate, I mean, that's an impressive mortgage. You're looking at $1,200, $1,300 a month for 30 years. And so I can see why the student loans could be a real big deal, and why it could be very hard to overcome. But if you do your due diligence, understand the career you want to get in, I would argue it could be very advantageous to take advantage of a student loan. And it just depends. It all depends on your personal situation. But I mean, my gosh, some of the doctors I represent and specialists I represent, I would totally argue that it is absolutely worth getting, in all these fields, dentists, attending physicians, neurologists, right? LASIK surgeons. I mean, yeah, you're going to be paying a fair amount in student loans to get that education. Quite often, these loans are well exceed $250,000. I mean, a brilliant surgeon that helped save my mom's life over a decade ago, he graduated with $1 million debt. But he's doing something he loves. He's saving lives. He's helping people. And these income streams can be phenomenal. And those debts, phenomenal income streams. And those debts can be paid off very, very quickly. And to have to go try to find a way to pay that type of, to delay that type of education years down the road, I think that could put someone in a very precarious position. So I absolutely understand the concern with student loans. I think they can really be a trap, but at the same time, they can be very, very advantageous. And if you understand the spread, understand opportunity cost and how, I mean, my gosh, look at time as an opportunity cost. Delaying a potential education for years and years and years when you already have defined what you know what you want to do, you're not going to get that time back ever. And as long as you understand what you're getting into, you understand how these loans work, you understand the commitment, you understand the obligation that you're going to have to pay this, and what your earned income, which is going to be the most phenomenal, your earned income is going to be your best investment for a long time. And so having a strong income to pay back that student debt over time, student loans can be very advantageous. They can be dangerous and they can be advantageous. And so I just think there's two sides to the story. And anyway, I just want to do this follow-up because it was creating questions quickly and concerns. And so I am so grateful for George Campbell coming on the show. I'm so grateful for what Dave Ramsey and other personalities with Dave Ramsey Solutions does to help create a strong foundation. And but if you want to go beyond a standard life or a fine life, you know, an ordinary financial life, and I'm not, I hope this isn't misunderstood. It's a good foundation. But if you want to go from ordinary to extraordinary and start creating phenomenal income streams where you have all this energy and time to maybe replace your spouse's income or if he or she wants to stay at home full time or be able to travel the world or seek a lot more experiences or create more companies or provide in other different ways or be part of nonprofits, whatever. If you want to really accelerate income streams, there is good debt and it could be very advantageous to leverage it so that you can have an extraordinary lifestyle today and a way wealthier tomorrow. I love doing the show. I love everyone listening. I love all the feedback and questions. I crave to be a five-star show every time I do an episode. And so that's pretty much it. Thank you. Please go to my website, engineeroffinance.com. And if you enjoy the show, I would love a rating, and please share this with others that you care for and look up to. And hopefully this podcast can make a difference for them. And please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions on anything. I'd love to help you take the next step. Thank you for listening. And I have a very exciting show for next week that I've been eager to share for several months. Thank you so much for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast. And I look forward to next week's episode.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. The content is intended for United States audiences only. Opinions expressed are as of the date of this publication, and such opinions are subject to change. Green Financial and Insurance Services Limited, Green, is not responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other claimed losses resulting from or related to the content presented. Green makes no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information presented. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Forecasts are not a reliable indicator of future results. Investors should be aware of the risks associated with investing. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of capital. Investors should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile. Consult with a qualified financial advisor as necessary before making any investment decisions. Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.